candles each week. We invite you to enjoy old-time radio mysteries right here on 89.3 FM WHFR Dearborn, Thursday evenings in its new time of 6 until 7 p.m. Tune in, if you dare.
Attention HFCC students and guests, the Skylight Cafe is your on-campus solution for a delicious and affordable meal. The Skylight Cafe offers several lunch and dinner options, including vegetarian and halal choices. The Skylight Cafe is located in the Student Center building on HFCC's main campus and is open for your convenience from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Thursday and 7 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Friday. When you're on campus, be sure to check out the Skylight Cafe.
The Henry Ford Community College Pre-Education Council will offer its annual pre-education conference Saturday, March 26, 2011 from 8 a.m. until 1 p.m. The conference will take place in the Andrew A. Mazzara Administrative Services and Conference Center located on HFCC's main campus in Dearborn, Michigan on Evergreen Road just south of Ford Road. Representatives from several colleges, including Eastern Michigan University, Mary Grove College, University of Michigan Dearborn, and more, will be available to talk with individuals about their programs, admission procedures, and scholarship opportunities available at their institutions. In addition, HFCC faculty and program graduates will present sessions about courses designed specifically for pre-service teachers and discuss the transitions to universities, student teaching, and working in the field. That's the annual HFCC Pre-Education Conference, Saturday, March 26th from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. in the ASCC building, right here on the main campus of Henry Ford Community College.
When I grow up, I want to be a baseball player. I would be the pitcher because they get to do something all the time.
If your child is sick over and over again, it could be PI, a defect in the immune system that affects millions. Early detection can give children a chance to dream.
Jeffrey Modell Foundation, 25 years of helping children reach for their dreams. Visit us at info4pi.org or call 1-866-INFO4PI.
Good afternoon. This is Lynn, your host of Impact, and we are here with a number of great visitors going to talk about how green Detroit really is, so it's a great thing. So stay tuned. We've got a little bit of music to get started, and you are listening to WHFR Dearborn, the station making waves, right here on 89.3 on your FM dial.
Oh, what a beautiful city. Oh, what a beautiful city. Oh, what a beautiful city. 12 gates to the city. Hallelujah. My God done just what he said. There's 12 gates to the city. Hallelujah. He healed the sick and he raised the dead. There's 12 gates to the city. Hallelujah. Oh, what a beautiful city. Oh, what a beautiful city. Oh, what a beautiful city. 12 gates to the city, hallelujah. When I get to heaven, gonna sing and shout, there's 12 gates to the city, hallelujah. Ain't nobody there gonna put me out, there's 12 gates to the city, hallelujah. What a beautiful city. Oh, what a beautiful city. Oh, what a beautiful city. 12 gates to the city. Hallelujah. Who are those people dressed in red? There's 12 gates to the city. Hallelujah. It must be the children Moses led. There's 12 gates to the city. Hallelujah. Oh, what a beautiful city. Oh, what a beautiful city. Oh, what a beautiful city. 12 gates to the city. Hallelujah. Three in the north, three in the south, three in the west, three in the east. There's 12 gates to the city. Hallelujah. Oh, what a beautiful city. Oh, what a beautiful city. Oh, what a beautiful city.
Alrighty, of course that was Pete Seeger, and the cut is called Oh, What a Beautiful City. And that's what we're working to obtain in Detroit, is a beautiful city. So with us today on Impact, we have Lisa Perez from the U.S. Forest Service. Welcome, Lisa.
Thank you.
And we have Justin Wojcik and Dean Hay from the Greening of Detroit organization. Welcome,
hello.
Guys.
Hello.
Thank you so much for coming and telling us about your upcoming projects and the need for volunteers, and we'll make sure that everybody knows how they can do that. I met Lisa a couple weeks ago, and I was absolutely intrigued with the fact that the U.S. Forest Service has a presence in Detroit, because I've lived here my entire life and had no idea. The U.S. Forest Service is housing Smokey Bear out in Washington State and Utah and faraway places, and I did not think anybody was here in Detroit. Found out that the office is on Temple, which is about as urban as you can get, and you said you're down the street from the Masonic Temple Theater.
Yep, I can see the Masonic Temple right out my window.
Okay. So tell us what this is such an urban environment. What does the U.S. Forest Service do here mm-hmm. in Detroit?
Well, great question. It's the U.S. Forest Service has what's called the Urban Connections Program. And the intent is, there are many national forest offices are all around the country, but many of them are in rural areas where they're closer to the national forests. But we're also very interested in connecting and communicating with our urban audiences. So there are urban connections offices in Boston, Minneapolis, Milwaukee, and Detroit.
Okay, so basically all the large cities throughout the U.S. are represented.
Really in the eastern area, in mm-hmm. our eastern region.
Mm-hmm. Okay, mm-hmm. All right. And tell us about some of the projects. Tell us how you make the urban area maybe a little bit less urban.
Well, really the key to the Urban Connections program is showing the benefits of the national forest to the urban audience, both in as a great place to go recreate, as well as the benefits of having trees and forests in your own backyard. Mm-hmm. So the Urban Connections program is really interested in creating education opportunities so people can understand more about those benefits of trees, as well as working with our partners like the Greening of Detroit, where they're working to beautify the city, plant more trees, for many different reasons.
Mm-hmm. Tell us how you do that. Do you go into various schools, or do students come to you? Do you have programs for both children and adults?
At this point, and it's a growing program, we primarily work through our partners, and we have, for example, at the Henry Ford, the museum in Greenfield mm-hmm. Village, mm-hmm. we have a partnership with them. It's been going on about 8 years, where we have assisted with providing seedlings to their visitors in the springtime, and at the same time, we celebrate a National Get Outdoors Day every June.
Okay.
And they also host a historic ranger who rides around on horseback in the Greenfield Village, and provides information to visitors about the National Forest Service.
Okay. How long has the U.S. Forest Service been in Detroit?
We've been here since approximately 2002.
Okay, so it is a relatively new program, though.
We've been here in different areas, and I should say I am the Forest Service person in Detroit, so it is one person.
It's a one-person office.
That's correct.
If we went outside of the Detroit area, where would we find the U.S. Forest Service, such as before you came here, you were here in Oakland?
Absolutely. Well, in the state of Michigan, there are several national forests. There's the Huron-Manistee in the Lower Peninsula, and there's the Hiawatha and the Ottawa on the Upper Peninsula, and they are... They have district ranger offices in, for example, Baldwin, Oscoda, Mayo, and then up on the Upper Peninsula as well.
Okay.
And another thing to point out, that's our national forest system. Another aspect of the Forest Service is what's called state and private forestry. It's an agency that works with our state forester to provide assistance to community and state forests. And that's the organization that's really helping out organizations like the Greening of Detroit.
Okay. How do you make a differentiation between what is a national forest, what is a state forest? Mm-hmm. How do we define the turf, if you will?
Absolutely. Well, you know, really good question. Essentially, to the visitor, it might be a different color of uniform. That's
okay.
The key.
Okay.
The being is that there are actually forests managed by that were proclaimed national forests through Congress. In Michigan, those were primarily done about 1905, even up to 1930, up on the Upper Peninsula.
Okay.
And those forests were essentially had been cut over forests. They had been harvested early 1900s and weren't replanted. And so at that point, there were massive forest fires going over, and really a very, it was a very different picture than what we see right now with all of the forests in Michigan. So through the Weeks Act, which was created in 1930, the federal government was able to purchase those lands and create national forests and replant, and now we have a thriving forest in Michigan.
Okay, so we're talking about the herbal habitat, if you will. What about the animals that are in the forest?
Mm-hmm.
Is that's part of your caretaking also?
Well, it's really important. The actual wildlife management is done through the state government. What the Forest Service does in those areas that are considered national forest land is they manage the habitat for the animals,
okay,
for the wildlife.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you could have a national forest which has the habitat managed by, or I should say the actual animals are taken care of by the state then,
mm-hmm,
within a U.S. facility?
That's right. So the state will essentially, the state determines, for example, hunting regulations, determines which animals should go if they're being threatened or in possible danger of extinction.
Mm-hmm.
They would suggest those for management that way.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Very, very interesting. Lots and lots of things going on. So you are a one-person office. When we look at some of the U.S. forests in the state of Michigan, what type of staffing does that entail, just approximately?
Oh, sure. There's usually a forest, at the forest supervisor's office, for example. There was one in Cadillac, one in Escanaba, and those might have approximately 20 or 30 professionals.
Okay.
And then district offices probably have about the same amount.
Mm-hmm.
And then each summer we have to hire many seasonal workers because we get a lot more visitors in the summertime.
Of course.
And so actually about right now is when the Forest Service, even nationwide, is looking for summer seasonals. And so a good place to look for those positions would be on usajobs.gov.
Okay. What sort of training does one need to become part of the Forest Service?
Mm-hmm. Oh, great question. There, within the Forest Service, because it's an agency, there's many different job opportunities. It's not just foresters that are employed by the Forest Service. So there are natural resource management positions, soil scientists, wildlife biologists, forester, of course. At the same time, we have archaeologists, landscape architects, engineers, and as well as our financial accounting staff and support staff.
Okay, we have. We have no idea what we're in for with the radiation and some of the other poisons coming out of Japan right now. Are the forests being managed in some way that people are looking to find out if we have any sort of chemical problems in the soil or in the trees? Or are we looking at the health of the forests on a, I'm thinking, relatively aggressive basis?
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. And we have to look at that in several different ways. Mm-hmm. Forest health, it helps, a healthy forest helps contribute not only to wildlife, but also to watershed protection, which is really important to our quality drinking water, as well as soil conservation, lots of different things. And possibly one thing that we didn't recognize so much back in the 1900s, but are recognizing more and more today, is the concept of carbon sequestration. Because with climate change, forests are actually a keeper of carbon. As they grow, they consume carbon dioxide and produce oxygen.
Right.
And then they keep that carbon. And so the forests are a really important tool in terms of the climate change that we're working with now.
So you would see that within the rings of the tree?
Uh-huh, yeah. Each ring is another year of growth of a tree. So, and that's essentially carbon that's maintained there.
Wow. I never thought about it that mm-hmm. way. So you're looking at perhaps some of the chemicals and some of the temperature changes and everything going on with the environment. That's our thermometer, basically, right?
It's a really good indicator. And in the city of Detroit, it's also a really important encouraging urban forests, like the greening of Detroit is doing, is a very important key to it as well, because in the urban areas, not only do we have just the general climate change issue, but we have what's called urban heat islands, because the there's so much pavement and essentially so much black in the city that absorbs heat. Cities are a little bit hotter than
right.
other areas in general,
right.
And if we're able to plant more greenery, then it provides shade and provides ways to absorb that heat so that people aren't affected as
much. So when we talk about the buildings, we talk about the asphalt,
mm-hmm.
which is black and very, very hot during
yep.
the summertime. You can see the steam coming. Okay.
Yep, so those urban gardens, urban trees, rooftop gardens all assist in helping keep the city cooler.
Okay. Very, very interesting. Let's take a little break, and we're going to hear from another one of Earth's friends, Woody Guthrie.
This land is your land, and this land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you and me. As I went a-walking that ribbon of highway, and I saw above me that endless skyway, I saw below me that golden valley. This land was made for you and me. I roamed and rambled and I followed my footsteps, sparkling sands of her diamond deserts. All around me a voice was a sounding, this land was made for you and me. There was a big high wall there that tried to stop me. A sign was painted, said private property, but on the backside it didn't say nothing. This land was made for you and me. When the sun comes shining, then I was strolling, and the wheat fields waving, and the dust clouds rolling. A voice was chanting as the fog was lifting. This land was made for you and me. This land is your land, and this land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you and me.
WHFR and Metaphysically Speaking are pleased to announce our third Festival of Enlightenment Holistic Fair, Saturday, March 26th from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. on the campus of Henry Ford Community College and the Student and Culinary Arts Center. There will be our usual array of fantastic vendors, psychic readers, and body healers. In addition, we will have some excellent speakers along with acoustic music in our cafe area. All of this is included with the admission price of only $5. As a special offer, any student with current school identification will be admitted free. Please come and join us for this celebration of life and spirit. Once again, that's the Festival of Enlightenment Holistic Fair, Saturday, March 26th, from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. at Henry Ford Community College. We hope to see you there at the fair.
The HFCC Community Outreach Committee will sponsor three free career workshops at the HFCC MTech facility in Dearborn. The first workshop, Career Networking, What's Your Electronic Footprint, takes place Wednesday, February 23rd. The second workshop, covering resume and cover letter writing, is Thursday, March 24th. And the third and final workshop, covering interviewing skills, will take place Thursday, April 21st. These workshops all start at noon and are free and open to the public. However, seating is limited. Those interested in attending these sessions must RSVP by calling 313-845-9820. That's 313-845-9820.
Hello? Hello, can you hear me? This is Jimmy. Every Tuesday from 2 to 4 p.m., I am floating in a tin can. I'm stuck on the spaceship in the future. Tune in as I play a mix of indie rock, retro, world music, whatever I can find on the ship. Help me come home. Only on WHFR Dearborn, 89.3.
Jill, why don't you tell the class what you did this weekend?
Well, my dad and I went in search of some magical minnows and found a zillion of them in the stream from our lookout rock. Then my sister and I escaped from an evil slug king and went back to my super twig fort for safety. Then we told stories till it got dark, and the Big Dipper led us all the way home. Wow.
Where were you, Jill?
We went to the forest. It's not that far away.
Ask your parents to take you and your friends to the forest this week. It's closer than you think. Check out discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Alrighty, and we are back. We're going to switch gears a little bit and talk to Justin and Dean about the Greening of Detroit. This is an organization I had heard about before and did know was in Detroit, but tell us a little bit about the history, how long it's been around, how long you've been involved.
The Greening of Detroit has been around for about 20 years, Lynn. Our original focus was to try to reforest the streets of Detroit because we were so appalled at the loss of the elm trees and the great loss that we saw on our streets. We started off as a very small measure and have been working up our momentum along the way. Over the past 20 years, we've planted a little over 62,000 trees.
Wow.
It's our organization has grown to include a lot of different focus. Currently, we have our urban agriculture and open space, and we also have a workforce department. And both of those are instrumental in looking at all the different foci within the city to make sure that we're looking at all of the green opportunities within the city for its residents.
Okay, how do you find these spots? Do you basically just look around the city? Are you driving up and down streets, or?
Well, we principally are a community-based organization, so most of the time our input comes directly from the residents of the city of Detroit. With our plantings, we have planting applications that are available that community groups can fill out the application in order to determine that there is a need for planting of street trees within their community, within their neighborhood.
Okay. Now, do you look at the condition and perhaps why the trees are gone? We had the elm crisis a number of years ago,
Emerald ash borer, yes.
Oh, gosh, that was, I lost a beautiful tree to that, so.
It was tragic.
It was horrible. Are you examining soil and what have you to make sure that a certain type of tree is going to do well?
Well, typically what we do, yes, we do look at the what the area is that we're going to be planted in. And we have a phrase that's called right tree, right location.
Okay.
And what that entails mainly is looking at how wide the planting area is, because within the city we see a variance of how wide the planting strip or the planting berm is between the sidewalk and the street. Also, we have a lot of other factors such as overhead lines that we want to make sure that we're not planting a tree that's going to grow into that overhead line and have to be cut down because it overgrew its space. And so a lot of things like that is principally what we're looking at, but we also want to make sure that the neighbors themselves are able to take on a tree within their in front of their yard, because some people are, you know, I don't really understand it myself, but averse to having a tree in front of their property. And so we want to make sure that the neighborhood itself is supportive of us coming in.
I had an elderly neighbor a number of years ago who was gung-ho against trees, although he has, and it's still there, the probably the largest poplar tree on the block. And a beautiful, beautiful tree. He would never touch that one, but he objected to any other trees, especially in the front, because they were guaranteed to get into the sewer lines.
Mm-hmm.
How much truth is there to that? Is it really an issue, or?
For certain types of tree, there it is an issue. We found that because of planting them in the wrong location, trees such as silver maples, which have a tendency to seek out water, especially in their root systems, they will destroy infrastructure such as sidewalks and driveways and streets, and they'll actually grow into storm sewers and sanitary sewers, seeking out the water or the nutrients that it finds within those structures themselves. So that's why we tend not to plant those. We plant a great biodiversity of species that we found don't actually have a lot of disease or are very urban tolerant and don't destroy a lot of infrastructure.
Okay. Are we looking at any sort of current crisis, if you will, or pending crisis with regards to a particular species at this point?
Well, we do have quite a few species that do have problems with disease or problems with insect infestation. Within the city, we maintain the trees in order to try to give them vigor so that they will be able to withstand any disease or insect infestation that may come along. But we tend to look towards the trends to see if there is something that we are starting to see in outlying regions. We won't plant that tree, or we'll plant minimal amounts of that tree within the city of Detroit.
What should a homeowner look for so far as a tree that may be on the brink of having a problem before it gets too far along?
One of the biggest indicators of the health of a tree is the amount of canopy, or the density of the canopy that it has. You'll start to see, especially with like emerald ash borer, that the canopy starts to decline in density over time. And then you'll start to see changes in the bark itself. The discoloration of the bark or the peeling of the bark is another indicator. Indicators of root problems is you may end up seeing fungal structures with on the bark itself. You may start to see some decay, which causes entire branches to fall off. Things like that, just general appearance of the tree. If you know what it's supposed to look like, look at other trees that are next door to it, then you'll get an idea of whether or not it's healthy.
Okay, all right. Good information. And Justin, we haven't heard from you. What would you like to tell us about Greening of Detroit?
Specifically this season, we're looking to bring out 7,000 volunteers to plant over 3,500 trees. We're looking to do this over 12 weekends, omitting Easter weekend for some people and Memorial Day weekend. But we'll be starting this Saturday, March 26th, and planting on through June 11th.
Okay. The numbers again, 35,000 trees.
3,500.
3,500 trees, okay.
Yes.
All right, that's still a whole lot of trees. So you would like to have a volunteer base of approximately how many people to cover 3,500 trees?
We're looking for about 7,000. We try to get about two people out for every tree we're planting. We found that that equates to a good pace, it's an enjoyable experience.
How old/big are the trees that you're planting?
The trees that we plant definitely vary. We plant smaller container stock that are 3 and 5 gallons, and then we also plant a little bit larger of a tree, which is 1 1/4 inch to 2 inch caliper, and that's just the measure of the thickness of the trunk.
Okay.
That makes sense.
And that's what, maybe a 10-year-old tree at that point? About that size, or?
5 to 10.
Yeah, about between 5 and 10 years.
Five
of
and
age.
10 years, okay. So we're talking some significant height.
Yes,
some significant work.
Yes, we try to group volunteers in about we try to put 3 volunteers in a group, and we find that between the three of them, they can easily maneuver the tree into the hole.
Okay. And how is the tree then? Once it's planted, we need to feed, we need to water. How is that handled on your projects?
The Greening of Detroit, we have a 3-year maintenance contract, and so we follow up with watering and pruning, typically in the summer when the trees are most thirsty.
Right.
We also look to work with the community to, make sure that. Would you speak to that, Dean? What am I?
Within our planting projects, we have groups of people that are there. Our staff typically are the ones who will train everyone, all the volunteers, as they come on.
Okay.
We also have a new program, a model program that we started this year called the Citizen Forester Program. And what this is a group of volunteers that are leaders, planting leaders. And those group of people will actually do the training for the volunteers that come out. And so they'll act as teams, three people per team, and move down the city streets in order to plant trees. And then at the end of the day, they'll complete as a team, and then we'll kind of do a debrief for them so that we can talk with them a little bit about their experience and make sure that it was a pleasurable one.
Great. Okay. So how exactly would one volunteer for this?
They could contact me, Justin Wojak. They could by email, volunteer@greeningofdetroit.com, or if you prefer phone, 313-237-1258.
Okay. And you'll take, what time are you starting on Saturday morning? I presume it's in the morning.
We're starting at 9 a.m. We do prefer that people RSVP with us in advance.
Okay.
Just so we can make sure to accommodate everyone accordingly, especially with tools.
Mm-hmm.
We are starting Saturday, but we do have a bunch of other dates that we'd be happy to set other people up with.
Is there a webpage that they can go to take a look at the upcoming projects, upcoming weekends?
Yes, they could visit our website, greeningofdetroit.com. And that would be found in the happening section, which is when you pull up the page, it's apparent it's over on the right.
Okay.
And then also at the bottom, they could click on the calendar, and that would pull up
a
calendar.
All right. And what area are you starting in this Saturday?
This Saturday, we're going to be planting on Deacon and Ethel Streets. They're over in southwest Detroit.
Oh, okay. So if are the trees cleared with the homeowners ahead of time? Do they know that you're going to be planting something on the boulevard or what have you?
We do communicate with residents, and if they voice that they would not like a tree planted in front of their house, we certainly do honor that.
Okay. And you're working only on the boulevard? You're not on the private property?
For these projects, we're only planting street trees.
Right.
So
okay.
Yes, it'd be between the sidewalk and the curb.
Okay. Okay. All right. But the what's the response you normally get? It has to be fantastic from the residents, because just looking at a tree-lined street, even if the trees are small and need to grow, looking at that tree-lined street after it was empty has to be such a great improvement. The residents have to be pleased.
Fewer than 10% ever opt out.
Ah. Okay. Yeah. So it makes a big difference, definitely. Okay, let's take a little break for some music, and we'll be right back talking about the greening of Detroit.
Singing the blues, heard the radio telling the news. Said the big red army took 100 towns and allies, dropping them 2-ton bombs. Started hollering, yelling, dancing up and down like a bullfrog. in come a man, signed my name, and got a telegram. Said, if you want to take a vacation trip, got a dishwashing job on a Liberty ship. Woman a-crying, me a-flying, out the door and down the line. About 2 minutes, I run 10 blocks, I come to my ship, down at the dock. Walked up the plank and I signed my name, blowed that whistle and was gone again. Right on out and down the stream. Ships dispersed, my eye could see. Woman waiting. Ship loaded down with TNT, all out across the rolling sea. Stood on the deck, watched the fishes swim. I was praying them fish wasn't made out of tin. Sharks, porpoises, jelly beans, rainbow trouts, mud cats, dugars, all over that water. This convoy's the biggest I ever did see. It stretches all the way out across the sea, and the ships blow the whistles and the ringer bells. Gonna blow them fascists all to hell. Win some freedom. Liberty, stuff like that. Walked to the tail and stood on the stern, looking at the big brass screw blade turn. Listened to the sound of the engine pound. Gained 16 feet every time went around. Getting closer and closer. Look out, you fascists. I'm just one of the merchant crew. I belong to the union called the NMU. I'm a union man from head to toe. I'm USA and CIO. Fighting out here on the waters to win some freedom on the land.
And we are back, and we're going to hear about... We're not going to hear about anything if I don't hit that button. Okay. And we're going to hear from Dean Hay, and he's going to talk to us about a new project.
Lynn, we've got three new projects that we're working with as part of the Forest Service funding that we received. It's part of the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative. These three projects are working within the city of Detroit in order to try to basically make a better habitat. One, we've talked a little bit about the emerald ash borer.
Yes.
What that is we are coming in back, working with a partner, the General Services Department within the city of Detroit. They are going through and removing the dead ash trees. And so what we're doing is we're working with them in order to come back in after they've removed those trees and replant trees that have a greater biodiversity. And so we're bringing an overstory, a potential new growth forest into those areas where we've lost a significant amount of canopy cover over the last 10 years. A second project that we're working with the Forest Service funding is called Dendro Remediation. And what this is we are finding sites within the city that have brownfields. And so we will be planting trees on those sites in order to try to remove the toxins that were part of whatever industry or former business or residence that was there so that we can make that property safe again. The third project that we're working on is a stormwater initiative. What we're trying to do is to build capacity in the combined sewer overflow system, or the sewer system within the city of Detroit. What trees generally do is they will capture amount of stormwater that falls from amount of rainwater that falls from the sky, so that it doesn't go into the storm sewers. And this is a very valuable quality that the tree has. And what this is doing is it's building capacity within our storm systems so that we don't have water that goes into the storm sewer or the combined sewer overflow, so that we have, it would be mixed in so it won't be mixing in with the sediments and all of the toxins that are a part of the sanitary sewer that would then have a combined overflow or controlled overflow into our rivers and lakes. And so this project is especially important to us because trees have a lot of qualities. This stormwater initiative that we're doing is very vital, and we see it as not only an ability for stormwater, but it's also going to clean up our watershed as well because we don't have those combined controlled sewer overflows into our rivers.
Right. How long does it take for a tree or a field of trees to actually clean up some of those toxins?
It depends on the toxin.
Okay.
The way that the trees actually work is it not only absorbs those toxins, but depending on what the toxin is, it can actually also just break down the toxin within the soil based off the chemistry that happens at the root hair and the soil interface. And so it doesn't necessarily need to, for some toxins, it doesn't necessarily need to absorb them into the biomass of the tree, but it can actually just convert it right at the soil level so that once the tree is at capacity or at growth, you can remove it. And now that land is safe and those toxins are either converted or removed.
Okay. On average, are we talking about waiting for 20 years or... It
really depends on which
toxins
it is. There's a lot of petrochemicals and other arsenics and things like that trees may take a little bit longer time in order to absorb all of the toxins or the amount of toxins.
Right.
That are in there.
Well, Detroit is 300 and some years old, and our history has always been sort of a manufacturing type entity.
Mm-hmm.
So you go back to a lot of those types of chemicals,
right,
which were considered fine at the time. We just didn't know.
They were part of the process.
Exactly.
Right.
And we just didn't know. We were dumping all kinds of things into rivers and just either, for the most part, it was ignorance and just didn't realize what we were doing so far as damaging the environment goes.
Correct.
So
what this is it's a really inexpensive way for us to not only to treat the problem, but to not have the great impact that removing that soil from that neighborhood or the adjacent neighborhood would be.
Right.
So
right.
We're beautifying as well as making the land green again.
I've always wondered about that when they talk about a brownfield and it's an old chemical plant or something that's, or even an old gas station, something that is no longer there that caused some damage, and they're going in to take away the soil. Where do you take the soil? Because that's millions of pounds of soil.
The soil is either put into a landfill or it's incinerated in order to cleanse the soil. But in cleansing the soil, you're also removing all of the biotics that are in there that would support any plant growth. So taking that soil back to the site is not really helpful. You actually have to replace the soil that is on that land.
Okay. It's a burning process to cleanse?
That's one method to do it, yes.
Okay. This is something I've never heard before.
It depends
on
the toxin.
Yeah.
I'm not a specialist in that kind of thing, but I know that those are two of the processes that are typically used and are very, very costly.
I would think. Wow. Okay, that's brand new news to me. I didn't know that fire was one of the methods of... But presumably... when you're done with this cleansing process, then it does go back, even though the soil doesn't have nutrients, so it needs to be rebuilt.
There's a way to regenerate the biotics within that soil because it still may be negligent depending on what the use is going to be.
Okay.
So depending on what the toxin level and what type of toxins are on there, we would have different biotics or different dendro solutions for those. And then part of those solutions may be that we would have to remove the biomass of the tree from there because the toxins may be held within
the tree
itself. Or it may be that we completely have neutralized it just by putting that type of tree using that type of solution.
Wow. Okay. If we have a toxic tree, which in fact has done its job, and it's taken all the bad news out of the soil, it's now part of the tree. What happens to the tree? Is that burned? Is that,
that
probably
that
the
would
most
need to be going to a landfill or a specialized facility?
Because it's in effect, it's hazardous waste.
It's containing the toxins.
Right. Exactly. Wow. Very interesting. Okay, and tell us about, do you have volunteers that are involved with any of this, or is this strictly specialists?
Well, right now these programs are shaping up for the fall, and mm-hmm. we're working with the City of Detroit in order to locate the sites,
okay.
in order to determine what types of toxins we'll be dealing with.
Okay.
And so we're formulating, because we're a volunteer-based model, we're formulating ways that we can work with the community, with the surrounding community, in order to make it safe.
Okay. One of the questions I should have asked early on and neglected to do is to get a little bit of a definition of the Greening of Detroit organization itself. It sounds like you're a 501c.
Yes.
And where does your funding come from? Some, as you mentioned, is coming from the Forest Service.
We get funding from many, many different sources, federal, and we also get private foundation funding as well. We have corporate funding. We have individual members as well.
Mm-hmm.
And we also have, individual relationships with groups that we become partners in order to get other types of grants as well.
Okay. Wow. So far as your paid base, how large is the corporation if you look at it that way, or the entity that way? And with your volunteer base, how large is the volunteer base?
We currently have about 20 people on staff.
Okay.
And our volunteer base, over the last 20 years, it's a significant number. I don't know that I can speak.
Yeah. Many. Many volunteers.
It's got to be tens of thousands. And looking at the number of people that we've impacted, not just with the volunteers that have been gracious enough to come out to help us with plantings, but the amount of communities, the number of people we've had time to deal with on our planting projects, our impact has been pretty significant.
That's fantastic. It's so good to hear good things happening in Detroit, too. Okay, so Greening of Detroit, and it's greeningofdetroit.com?
That's where you
.org?
Can...
.com.
.com, okay. And you need volunteers for Saturday?
For Saturday's upcoming, I think we're just about full for this Saturday.
Okay.
But especially towards the end of April, May, and beginning of June.
Okay. We need lots of trees. Okay, and Lisa, we have a couple things we need to talk to you about before we wrap up this. I told you this would go very fast. I want to take a little break for some messages, and we'll be right back.
WHFR and Metaphysically Speaking are pleased to announce our third Festival of Enlightenment Holistic Fair, Saturday, March 26th from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. on the campus of Henry Ford Community College and the Student and Culinary Arts Center. There will be our usual array of fantastic vendors, psychic readers, and body healers. In addition, we will have some excellent speakers along with acoustic music in our cafe area. All of this is included with the admission price of only $5. As a special offer, any student with current school identification will be admitted free. Please come and join us for this celebration of life and spirit. Once again, that's the Festival of Enlightenment Holistic Fair, Saturday, March 26th, from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. at Henry Ford Community College. We hope to see you there at the fair.
Ranger Station.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting, as in Smokey Bear. We were about to head home after a bonfire, and Smokey said the fire wasn't actually out. He said if it's too hot to touch, it's too hot to leave.
Did you know that 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans?
No kidding.
I'm a forest ranger. We never kid.
Sorry.
Kidding. Get your Smokey on. If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
I love to play with you, run and jump all day.
Are you in need of child care? The HFCC Child Development Center provides state-licensed quality child care for children from 2 years, 9 months to 12 years of age. The children must be toilet trained. Child care is available Monday through Friday for children of HFCC students and staff, as well as the community. The center is located on Henry Ford Community College's main campus in Dearborn. The center can provide all day, part-time, evening, and temporary child care in order to help accommodate your busy schedule. To enroll your child, please call 313-317-6527. That's 313-317-6527, or visit hfcc.edu.
We'll have lots to do. Let's play together. It's what we love to do.
Okay, we're back. We're going to talk about, in the last couple minutes here, we're going to talk with Lisa again, and she's going to tell us about some things going on at the Henry Ford.
Absolutely. Well, there at the Henry Ford Greenfield Village, we'll be doing, starting April 15th, seedlings will be available for folks to take home and plant in their own backyards. There's several different varieties, as well as June 11th will be National Get Outdoors Day. Great time to find out different places to take groups, children, get your children and families out into the outdoors. One of the things also we're working on with the Greening of Detroit is on Saturday as well. We've actually collaborated with Michigan Tech University and the Belle Isle Nature Zoo to do a series of teachers' workshops. This coming Saturday will be on how teachers can create a natural area or garden in their own school environment, and they can utilize that to teach children science, math, reading, lots of different ways they can utilize that outdoor environment for teaching.
Yeah, and trees definitely are our friends. And this neighbor I mentioned earlier, every time he said something horrible about a tree, we planted another one. So the backyard is very full. Very interesting too, Dean, on the you mentioned the silver maple. I'm underwater right now, which happens every spring, and the silver maple is, that's why it grows so well. It's underwater. It's so happy, and now I understand why. So thank you very much for that information.
It's a river floodplain species, and I love to be there all the time.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, all three of you, for coming in. This has been a fantastic learning experience for me, and I know it has been for the listeners also. So Lisa from the Forest Service, any parting words?
Well, yes, trees are our friends. They have many benefits, one of which is the paper I see all around us. The trees are a renewable resource, so as they grow, they provide us benefits, and they also provide us benefits in the products that they create for us. So they're a great thing to have in your backyard to enjoy, and as well as to come out and visit the National Forest.
Okay. Justin, you want to make a plug for some volunteers?
In terms of volunteers, we look for people who are willing to learn, have an open mind, and want to dig in and get dirty. So
okay. And the website and phone number?
I can be reached by email, volunteer@greeningofdetroit.com, or by phone, 313-285-1258.
And Dean?
Thank you very much for having us.
Oh, thank you.
We look forward to having you come out to one of our plantings this spring.
I might pick
spring.
Up a shovel in the future. Right.
And to all of your listeners, thank you, and look forward to seeing you as well.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
And do take a look at the WHFR webpage. There are a number of links that you will find helpful. So thank you so much for listening to this version of Impact, and we will be back at the end of, it'll be the fourth Tuesday in April, and we're going to be talking to the Motor City Brass Band about some of their youth projects. Lots of fun, lots of great things. Thank you. You are listening to WHFR Dearborn. We are the station making waves, and we're making way for Jimmy's sister Jackie coming up at 2 o'clock, and we're going to go out with some of the earth-friendly people that we've been listening to today. A little bit more from Pete Seeger.
I asked my love to take a walk, just to walk a little way. And as we walk and as we talk of our golden wedding day, then only say that you'll be mine. In no other arms you'll find, down beside where the waters flow, on the banks of the Ohio, I drew a sword across her breast. Gently in my arms she pressed, crying, Willie, oh Willie, don't you murder me, for I'm unprepared for eternity. Then only say that you'll be mine. In no other arms you'll find, down beside where the waters flow, on the banks of the Ohio. I took her by her lily white hand, I led her down where the waters stand. I picked her up and pitched her in, and watched her as floated down. And only say that you'll be mine. In no other arms you'll find, down beside where the waters flow, on the banks of the Ohio. I started back home 'twixt 12 and 1, crying, my God, what have I done? I've murdered the only woman I love, because she would not be my bride. Then only say that you'll be mine. In no other arms you'll find, down beside where the waters flow, on the banks of the Ohio.
WHFR, Dearborn.